Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
He wants the keys to the highest office in the land, the man who would be next. But who is Paul Mashatile? And why has he been described for so many years as the Don, the head of the so-called Alex Mafia? My name is Bongani Bingwa, and I'm thrilled to be a part of this episode of the PageCast podcast. In my day job, I'm usually the host of 702 Breakfast, but I'm joined for a very important conversation by the award-winning author and journalist Peter du Toit about his new book, The Dark Prince.
Sounds so ominous when you say it, when you voice over it like that.
But let's talk about Paul Mashatile. I mean, he's knocking on the doors of the union buildings. No better time to write a book about him.
Well, that's what we thought. And what fascinated me about this is that he's not really, he doesn't really have this well-known public persona, for example, Bongani, that other incumbent or prospective ANC leaders had previously. I mean, we knew who Nelson Mandela was, obviously. We knew who Thabo Mbeki was. I think we knew what Jacob Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa stood for. But who is Paul Mashatile? So the history behind him, but where he came from, I found that fascinating.
How is it that this powerful man is so little known?
Look, the similarities between him and Jacob Zuma, for example, was striking to me. You know, we can talk about the networks and the patronage and so on, but both of them were provincial politicians initially. I mean, Jacob Zuma used KZN as his base, was an MEC for a couple of years where he was MEC for economic development. And he used KZN to build up his base. Obviously, his Zulu roots played a big role to engender that support. But Paul Mashatile is quite similar. Comes from Alex, north of Johannesburg, played a big role in the anti-apartheid struggle, then moved into provincial politics and built that empire in this province. So I think the reason why he's not that well known is because he was the strong man in Gauteng for so many years, much like Ace Magashule, I think, was in the Free State, Bongani, and really elevated into the national consciousness, I think, around 2017, when he, of course, became Treasurer General of the ANC.
We'll come to his national profile in just a moment, but I'm going to go straight to the book because you start from the beginning in your prologue where you say, shortly after becoming deputy president in March 2023, Paul Mashatile received a dubious character called Louis Liebenberg at his palatial home in Waterfall Midrand. Liebenberg, a grifter and a bombast, gave Humile Mashatile a diamond. The size of the stone is in dispute, but the fact that the Mashatiles accepted the gift is not. We know, of course, who this Liebenberg character is.
Dodgy guy.
Ends up at Khosi Mampuru prison. And the obvious question is, why has there been no political cost to this kind of association for the person who would be next?
It's such a great question. And I think, Bongani, you know, you can. There are so many figures in government and the ANC that you can ask this very same question of. Many of our political leaders, unfortunately, fraternize and socialize with people of dubious morals and ethics. And I think what that anecdote illustrates to me, Mashatile wants to be head of state. Now, in our country, if you want to be head of state, and I'm certainly not saying all the heads of state that we've had since 94 are unblemished, because no one is. But you have to try and at least indicate to your supporters that you're trying at least to live an ethically upright and respectable life.
Yeah, there has to be an appearance of propriety.
Even if there is an appearance of propriety, you know, you need to maintain that. Now, Louis Liebenberg is the dodgiest of dodgy characters. I mean, he's a self-admitted racist. I mean, the band is about the K word, the stuff that he said. He's a bombast, he's a grifter, and then he gives someone who wants to be the head of the party and the country a diamond for his wife. And then it's, you know, they accept the gift. Surely that gives us an insight or an indication of who, what company the guy keeps, what company Mashatile keeps. And we can talk about the tenderpreneurs in that network, Edwin Sodi, for example. So receiving a diamond as a gift from someone of Louis Liebenberg's character and standing indicates to me that Mashatile's judgment is lacking, that he likes the good life. I mean, giving your wife a diamond like that's obviously a good thing to do, but it does show poor judgment, and it does tell me that he tends to mingle with people that you don't want close to government.
You and I could do that, but as you say, we would perhaps try to cover it up.
Mm.
Why is he unbothered to use that colloquial term?
I think we are seeing this era of impunity and the fact that accountability has almost completely been lost. I mean, you work in the news, I work in the news, we follow the Madlanga Commission every day, the ad hoc committee into police corruption every day. It's the result of a culture of impunity where there's no shame, where when a politician is caught in a lie, when he's caught in by investigative journalists with his proverbial pants down. You know, there's no real public shame. There's no real public accountability, and there's no formal accountability either in the party structures or in terms of the criminal justice system. So I think Mashatile reached the hype, the second highest point in South African politics as deputy leader of the ANC and deputy leader of the country. And I think, you know, politicians in those the rarefied air of high office, Bongani, we see it the world over. You know, they do think that the laws of political gravity doesn't apply to them. So taking a diamond off a dodgy character like Liebenberg, you know, it's a much of a muchness.
It's an extraordinary thing because quite apart from the questions of criminality around Liebenberg, as you say, he is a self-admitted racist.
Yes.
What does all of that say about our politics, about the voters in South Africa, that you've got the deputy president consorting with a racist,
yes,
alleged criminal?
Yeah. Look, the politics of expediency. I mean, not only is Liebenberg close to Mashatile, apparently, but close to Zuma. I mean, his wedding was attended by Lindiwe Zulu of the ANC. So, I mean, why? Is it money flows? Is it because these people donate money? Is it because they help these politicians with their lifestyles? That's what I think, and that's what I try to explain in this book. But it is the politics of expediency.
But you
talk about voters. That's such a difficult question because you'd think that voters, and we're starting to see it. I mean, we saw it in 2024's election. Voters, I think, are now starting to see that I'm going to have to start voting on the basis of the issue of the moment and not because of identity, perhaps history. I think we might be moving away from that. But voters, I think, need to answer that question for themselves. And I think that's something which we're going to have to discuss in the next year ahead of the municipal election.
You describe in the book Paul Mashatile as disengaged and unserious.
Mm.
Some years ago, the author Suresh Roberts borrowed from that 1992 ANC policy paper. Is Paul Mashatile fit to govern?
You remember the drama around that book. He was fated as Thabo Mbeki's brain almost at that stage. You know, I don't think he's fit to govern. No, I do not think he's fit to govern. I think he's so. There's two tracks or two strands or bands that I think you can answer this question. One is looking at his record as an elected official, MEC in Gauteng, occupied a number of portfolios. Then went to cabinet, minister and deputy minister, went back into the Gauteng provincial government after a stint in parliament as the chairperson of a committee. What did he achieve as an elected official? Very little. Why do I say that? He comes from Alex. Alex is a tough place to live. It's one of the most underserviced townships in Gauteng. Historically, it was at the center of the resistance against apartheid. You know, it's on the opposite side of Joburg from Soweto. That was the township that really, I don't want to say spawned him, but it really gave him his consciousness as far as politics are concerned. In 1999, Bongani, Paul Mashatile becomes MEC of Housing. 2001-2, I think it was, Thabo Mbeki, the president, launches the Alexandra Renewal Project, gives billions of rands to the Gauteng Department of Housing, run by Paul Mashatile, to redesign, reimagine, modernize Alex, which is many parts of slum. What does Mashatile do? The project goes south. You know, mismanagement, funds misspent, service delivery doesn't really ever reach what they wanted it to do. The Human Rights Commission found that the project was a disaster. It's emblematic, I think, of someone that reaches executive power, but then forgets his roots. I mean, if he came from Alex, he had the opportunity to use billions of rands of taxpayers' money authorized by the state to completely revamp Alex. It was a disaster. So just to complete the point, I don't think there's a single policy position that you can say is Mashatile's. This is what he stood for. This is what he achieved. Whether it's, I don't know. I mean, whatever.
He doesn't have a thing.
There's no real thing. Every politician has something. He doesn't have a thing.
If you contrast the squalor of Alex in the shadow of the opulence of Santon, that's a particular indictment on Paul Mashatile. But perhaps it's part of a bigger systemic thing, because you argue in your book that one of our original sins was our three-tier system of governance. And that, in fact, as soon as he could, when he got access to the kitty, he didn't blink.
Yeah. And it was interesting when I did research for the book, because when you start a book like this, especially a character like this who's not, I mean, you really have to delve deep to find the real story about Paul Mashatile. I found reports that I actually wrote in 2006 about the profligacy that he engaged in, taking friends, colleagues, contacts, departments, whomever he could, to these very expensive restaurants down here in Santon. Auberge Michel, which is a restaurant that doesn't exist here today, spent hundreds of thousands of rands in 2006 rands at those restaurants. I mean, these days it would have been completely over the top. So he very quickly moved into that space where he's now the boss man in this department. He's got the company credit card, as it were. And it's within his rights to lead the life that he thinks he's entitled to.
Why does being an MSC become such a pivotal point of extraction?
That's a good question. I think what was so a step back, growing up in Alex, and Bongani, let me say this as well. When I started doing this, I found myself actually developing quite a sense of empathy for Mashatile. I mean, he was only able to finish his matric at 21 because he was engaged in the anti-apartheid struggle. He literally felt the yoke of the secret police, or the security police as it was known, the police with their cuspers and armored vehicles, slamming into protesters in Alex. So he led a difficult, his youth was very difficult. He was jailed for 4 years, detention without trial under P.W. Buerta's state of emergency, engaged in a hunger strike to get attention, the world's attention on what was happening. So he did his part. But in that period, he became part of a very close-knit network of friends called the so-called Alex Mafia, which included, a number of activists who later went with him into provincial politics. So this so-called Alex Mafia moved up with him through the ranks after 1990. I waded through the Wits archives and found their names alongside his name on so many ANC memoranda, agendas, minutes, policy documents of the ANC in the old PWV region. And then when Paul Mashatile moved into provincial politics, thanks to Tokyo Sekgwale, this so-called Alex Mafia moved with him. So Alex was his Heimat. That's where he came from. Gauteng was his base, and it was all premised on the executive power that he was able to obtain after he became MEC.
I want to keep with this line of questioning, because the point I'm trying to get to, and I think it comes through in the book, and it's no surprise to me that you felt some sympathy towards the man, because you also paint a picture of the system that produced him and the system in which he operates. Mm. The fact that you can't be an individual in the ANC and ascend to any position of significance without some core constituency that moves with you, that you have to reward, your own personal patronage network.
Absolutely. And I think his first patron was Tokyo Sekgwale. When I accessed Barbara Hogan's personal papers at the Wits Archives, which is, by the way, such a fantastic resource, those national archives, you can piece together the story of the ANC in Johannesburg and in the old Southern Transvaal after 1990. And when you see those names, it's fascinating to see which actors are still on the stage. The most important and significant figure shortly after the ANC was unbanned in the old PWV region, Pretoria, Witwatersrand Vereniging, which is now Gauteng, was Galema Motlanthe, because he was a major organizer coming from the National Union of Mine Workers. Winnie Mandela was also part of the regional executive, and then Tokyo Sekgwale. They were the most important and charismatic figures. I don't think Galema Motlanthe is quite that charismatic, but they were the major figures. And Paul Mashatile was very quickly pulled into that environment. I mean, it's quite astonishing. He was 31 in 1996, 61 born, 91 he was 30.
30, yeah.
So by that time already, he was part of the ANC's regional executive in Joburg and in Gauteng. And Tokyo Sekgwale very quickly took him under his wing. And I found in one of these documents where the minutes detail that Tokyo Sekgwale was late for a meeting because he was picking up Paul at his house because Paul's car wasn't working, and then they hit traffic and, you know, they're late. Shortly after that, when Tokyo Sekgwale couldn't chair some of these meetings, he became provincial chairman, it was Paul Mashatile at the age of 30, 31, 32 who started chairing meetings where you had all these ANC luminaries on the regional executive, and Tokyo Sekgwale gave that responsibility to Paul. So the first patron was Tokyo, and Tokyo also took him into his provincial executive in Gauteng after 1994 without portfolio. So he was an MEC almost without portfolio. So he was very early, I think, identified certainly by Tokyo Sekgwale as someone that he needs to keep close and that can be useful.
Had potential.
But with that, so it's a very good point you make because Paul was part of Tokyo's network of patronage, but Paul had his own network of patronage, and that included the members of the so-called Alex Mafia that moved with him through the provincial ranks of the party and then into government.
But it's also such a roll of the dice, is it not? Because as soon as Tokyo was out of favor,
absolutely,
and there's this been consistent, you might say, resistance against Paul Mashatile,
yeah,
by various ANC presidents over quite a period of time.
And Bongani, looking back where we are now, I mean, where we are now with the ANC, I mean, I think you and I can almost clearly see the different factions in the party, how it's playing out, because we've seen this movie over the last 20 years playing out every couple of years ahead of an ANC elective contest. I think it was the same back then. You know, we know it was the same back then. So the premier was Tokyo Sekgwale, but Thabo Mbeki didn't like him. Why? You know, they were part of different groupings in the ANC. So what does Paul Mashatile do? He's obviously part of the Sekgwale grouping. He's a youngster. You know, he's hitching his wagon to Sekgwale, but Sekgwale is falling out of favor. Now in comes Thole Moshega as premier, but Thabo Mbeki doesn't like him either. So now Mashatile can kind of distance himself from the various factions, but he's always been able to play this internal ANC politics where, yes, Thabo Mbeki initially didn't like him, and then, you know, he was pulled into the executive again by Mbazi Mashiloa, who was close to Thabo Mbeki. Jacob Zuma becomes head of state. You know, Zuma obviously doesn't like Mashatile. Mashatile doesn't like Zuma.
But why was that?
That's interesting. And let's talk about that. So Mashatile was briefly installed as premier when Shiloa resigned. You'd recall Shiloa resigned after Thabo Mbeki was forced out. And as a show of protest and solidarity, you know, Mbazi Mashiloa. And off to Kopi he goes. And he's, you know, these days you see him at these Portuguese restaurants in northern parts of Joburg. But yes, so Mbazi Mashiloa was gone. Paul Mashatile became premier only for 8 months and replaced by Nomvula Mokonyane for a very short period of time. Jacob Zuma didn't like Paul Mashatile because you had two competing networks of patronage. Paul Mashatile, by that time, in 2008-09, had established his network in Gauteng. The so-called Alex Mafia, many of them were in senior executive positions in the Gauteng government. Many of these entities related to the government was used to distribute largesse, used to distribute patronage. And that was a big part of the Mashatile network. Zuma obviously had his own patronage network, his own networks of influence. So you had competing networks of patronage and patronage networks of influence. Zuma didn't want that. He wanted Gauteng on his side. Now, the history of the ANC in Gauteng is that it's always been kind of opposed to whomever is the leader of the day. So there's a bit of a history there as well. But Bongani essentially boils down to competing networks of patronage and competing networks of influence. Mashatile wasn't opposed to Zuma because of some other principled issue around state capture or, you know, the corruption trial that he was still involved in. He tried to protect his own. Both of them did. And that's where the conflict arose.
So you paint this picture of really the feeding trough. Whoever gets to be in charge of any section of the kitty, that's who determines what happens next. Yeah. If we fast forward to this particular moment, the processes that you've already referred to, is this a watershed moment? Is this the tipping point where all of this is now in the open? Because journalists have been writing about this for many years, but it hasn't captured the public imagination in the way that we are seeing. Not even the State Capture Commission of Inquiry did.
It's an interesting point you make. I think in 2017, when Cyril Ramaphosa defeated Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, 2022, when he defeated the challenge by William Kize, you know, the first election that Ramaphosa won famously was called the Billion Rand election, because by some estimates, almost R1 billion was poured into this campaign. It's a party, it's an intra-party campaign. It's not even a national election. It's a hell of a lot of money to spend on a leadership campaign. Now, where does that money come from? We know that some of
Where does it go?
Some of it comes from CI. Some of it comes from crime intelligence. Some of it comes from those secret accounts where you see, where we saw operatives of CI on the day of the election withdraw money from ATMs and use it to buy off branches. Because that's essentially at the moment how you become ANC leader. You have to buy branches, you have to buy regions, and eventually you get the support of a province. That's how these politics work. That's how it works. And that's how Mashatile will become president. I mean, so you have to have net access to these networks. You have to have been able to build up your own network to be able to fund this, because that's how you eventually end up as part of the top eight, as it's now known. Is it a tipping point? Maybe it could be, Bongani, because I think, you know, what we're seeing now play out at Madlanga, for example, when we see reports about how the networks of extraction work around Tembisa, you know, in what's happening in Ekurhuleni, where you've got ANC, local ANC leaders, where money is recirculated into those ecosystems. I think the public are starting to realize that. And also, we need to not forget that the ANC in 2024 lost 17 percentage points at the polls. And there's various factors that fed into that. But a drop of 17 percentage points, that's a hell of a lot.
Where does this place Mashatile's own relationship with Cyril Ramaphosa? In the book, you point out that, in fact, he has been entrusted with some key responsibilities, including managing the ANC within the wider context of this coalition.
Yeah. So let me say this, that it's a very fluid environment where we are now. We're still a year out. Look, we're a couple of weeks away from the National General Council, the ANC's midterm conference, which is normally the starting gun for any prospective candidate a year out from the elective conference. So mid-December, we're going to start seeing how the chips are starting to fall, how the tectonic plates are moving. Because what we're increasingly hearing, Bongani, is that that someone like Toko Didiza might be the person that the Ramaphosa camp might start pushing and might start to put forward. We know for a fact that Mashatile has a very strong organization around him, that the last election when he became deputy president, his advisors and the people around him, around his campaign, said that, you know, they're not beholden to anyone, either William Kize or Cyril Ramaphosa. If they don't select Mashatile, they're very confident in their ability to eventually ascend to the top position. So they're very confident in where they are. So talk of the Diza might be a challenger. Senzo Nkunu obviously has been shifted out given the dramatic events of July after Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi made his explosive allegations. So we are in a fluid environment. We're seeing Mashatile. Mashatile is certainly the front runner, I'd argue.
Balula is a name that's in that hat.
Yeah, yes, but can you take him seriously as someone that can govern the country? Govern the party?
The difficulty all of that raises, and I go back to this question of managing the ANC's relationship with the other partners in the GNU.
That's a good point you made, yeah.
Which is a key responsibility. Yes. But should Paul Mashatile make it? The irony is, even as the GNU is now looking like it's settling, there is still this idea that if there is a coalition, it will look very different.
I think, let me just go back to your first question earlier, which I did not answer. Yes, the president has given Paul Mashatile much more responsibilities than he got from Jacob Zuma. Paul Mashatile has been on numerous state visits overseas, Japan, China, France, the UK. He's been entrusted to meet with the barons of capital in London, you know, seeing the big investment banks, you know, engaging with ratings agencies. So he's really, his profile in those environments has really been lifted by the fact that the president has given him these responsibilities. You mentioned that he is in charge essentially of intra-party relations in the GNU. Not to forget that the budget negotiations earlier this year, which was so fraught, was run from Paul Mashatile's office after being delegated to him by the president, which tells you objectively that the president trusts him, that the president is empowering him to a large extent to build up his profile. But I'm not convinced that the president really supports his candidacy for the future or for the ANC leadership. But who else is there? And that's a question the ANC – I mean, the ANC, if you look at their next cohort of leaders, if this was 15 years ago, you know, you had, you know, tiers and tiers of experienced senior leaders who came from the struggle, who, you know, were involved in the negotiations, for example. Very few of them are left, and it's a problem for the party.
So then if the cupboards are bare, as you suggest, what does that mean for whatever coalition might come after the next general election?
Yeah. So I would bet a couple of rands that should Paul Mashatile become ANC leader in 2027, that is one of his very first policy decisions, one of his very first moves would be to see whether common ground can be found with MK and with the EFF. Mashatile is someone that, as are many in the ANC, are driven by the fear of the loss of political power, not only for the sake of political power, but because it means you lose access to patronage, you lose access to state resources, you lose access to tenders, you lose access to state contracts. So there will be a very strong push to see if the EFF and MK can be reunited under the banner of the Mashatile ANC. Now, as we spoke about earlier, there is some bad blood between Mashatile and Zuma. I think that will be overcome with the specter of losing political power hanging over them. And I think it's
and
a hop
carrot to offer the MKP.
And I think it's a hop, skip, and a jump through Panyaza Lesufi to get Julius Malema back on board. I mean, when you talk about carrots, I mean, Deputy President Julius Malema, it's going to be very enticing for him. So that composition certainly might be different.
What kind of president will he be?
Look, I write in the book because I thought to myself, I need to throw it forward. So I went to go and have a look at his economic positions, you know, his statements, certainly since he became deputy president of the country. He's not going to veer off established ANC policy. I can't really say that he's an original economic thinker. He's the most policy pronouncement that he has made since becoming deputy president was in support of BEE as it exists. So he's not going to veer off from that policy position.
As recent as today, he was talking about land expropriation.
Absolutely right. So that remains part of Mashatile's economic makeup. The one thing that I would say for him is that in many of his economic statements and speeches, he does acknowledge the role of the private sector in the economy and as part of any job creation initiative that we should launch in order to address unemployment. So that's kind of conventional and stock standard ANC economics.
So he's pragmatic within ANC yes. orthodoxy, but you yes. also say he's not always comfortable with media independence.
No, he's not. He has been known to be somewhat antagonistic towards the media. I would be concerned about his approach towards the rule of law. You know, he's had his brushes with investigations in the past. As we sit here, he is under investigation by the Hawks. There is an investigation by the Public Protector ongoing. There's an investigation by Parliament's Ethics Committee that's still ongoing. So he is uncomfortable with that. And if we're going to fix the country, the criminal justice system needs to be number one on our agenda.
This is why I ask, is this a watershed? Because the parallels to the rise of Jacob Zuma are so striking.
Yes,
we've been watching South African politics for some time.
They are.
The difference I would posit is that much of what we knew about Zuma were whispers. It was vague. He hadn't been quite caught out in some of his lies. He hadn't had to reverse his positions, which we have seen Mashatile do. Mashatile can't quite claim to be a victim in the way that Zuma did. He can't even perhaps claim to be a man of the people in the way Zuma could.
Certainly not.
You don't have a house in Waterfall.
Yeah. And in Constantia.
In Constantia, I beg your pardon, a house that you have use of.
Yes.
And claim those things.
Yeah. So Zuma, Zuma's big thing was, and I remember it so well in 2009, people said, look, he is going to become president. Let's move beyond the arms deal drama. The charges have been dropped. You know, Zuma connects with people at grassroots level. He understands people's concerns. He's not this aloof philosopher king that Mbeki was. Mashatile doesn't have that charisma. He doesn't really have that link or that connection with people on the grassroots. What he does have is this enormously strong network in Gauteng. He has the benefit of having been in the ANC's leadership since 2017. He has the benefit of no real other challenges, I think. But you're right, the similarities are there. If Mashatile would ascend to the union buildings, much like Zuma had his benefactors, Mashatile has his benefactors.
Have we learned
nothing? And they will go to the union buildings with him.
Have we learned nothing?
Well, I sure as hell we have learned something, and that's why I wrote the book, is to, you know, and then the argument is, but you're a journalist, you know, you're supposed to be objective. You know, it's about being fair, and it's about doing your job as a journalist and warning people that we saw this movie 10 years ago. Let's not make the same mistake again, because I don't think we can afford it.
Or is my line of questioning based on the assumption that Cyril Ramaphosa is different from both Jacob Zuma and Paul Mashatile?
And that's what we all hoped and thought. I mean, it's something that we regularly discuss as journalists, isn't it, Bongani? I mean, when Cyril Ramaphosa became president on Valentine's Day 2018, you know, the country rejoiced. Everyone was, you know, at long
Ramaphoria.
Last. Yes, you know, we've moved beyond the Zuma era. Now we can see, listening to Madlanga, listening to Ad Hoc, listening to what happened at the Road Accident Fund, you know, we can go on and on and on. Things haven't changed. It has not changed. It's certainly not going to change under Paul Mashatile. If Cyril Ramaphosa was unable to do it, I don't think Paul Mashatile can.
Can any mud stick to Mashatile between now and the general election?
Never say never. Never say never, man. But what makes someone like Mashatile very clever and astute is that you won't find his fingerprints on an EFT. You won't find his fingerprints on the final sign-off on a tender. But everyone in his network benefits from his position as the political principal. Everyone in his network supports his lifestyle, whether it is paying his bills at upmarket restaurants in Melrose Arch, whether it is paying for the bills of romantic interests who have bumped their cars, you know, paid for by some of his benefactors, by Mashatile's benefactors, whether it is him having access to luxurious homes owned by tenderpreneurs situated on the Atlantic seaboard, whether it is his son-in-law getting loans from the Gauteng government while he was there, which he then might very well have used to buy the waterfall house of 39 million or the 27 million rand house in Constantia, all within the space of 30 days. So people around him seem to do very well, and his lifestyle seems to be supported by these networks.
And none of that has stopped, because even on these trips you've mentioned overseas, there are yet more people coming into that network, yes, who are benefiting from state procurement, whose experience or track record is questionable. I'm thinking of the water tanker situation in Johannesburg, for example. Why does none of this seem to matter to the people who decide ultimately, and that is the voter?
Again, I think it might be changing, Bongani. I mean, I'm so looking forward to next year's municipal election, especially in our neck of the woods. Because, you know, as you and I are sitting here, many, many, many suburbs in Johannesburg are without water again. You know, this happens all the time. And I think that type of thing is now starting to frustrate voters, because these are basic things. You know, we're not even talking about high-level policy discussions about what macroeconomic interventions we should execute in order to do A, B, or C. These are basic things.
Is it fair to say that even if that shift is happening, however slowly, the calculations you make as a potential president of the ANC is A, around your networks, but also the kind of agreements that can be reached within the party and outside of it. And
absolutely,
so you're not necessarily all that bothered. And so I suppose my ultimate question is, how do you separate the dark prince from what is very clearly the dark party?
You can't. Unfortunately, that's what the party has become. And I write in the book that Mashatile comes from this tradition that you've just described, a tradition where patronage politics is the politics of the stomach, where patronage politics is not only a type of politics that supports politicians' lives of excess, like in the instance of Paul Mashatile, but is also a lifeline for the party to survive. Because the party needs this. They need access to these networks of extraction, these middlemen, these front companies to extract resources to stay alive.
What does business do? I mean, we've seen so much, for all the criticism we can level against Ramaphosa, we've seen an incredible reversal in that relationship, that mistrust that was so entrenched in the Zuma years.
Yeah.
But if you think of things like Operation Vulindlela, for example, so much work has been done to get us moving forward. Does Paul Mashatile take the baton and run with those?
Look, the only thing that business can do is keep on supporting someone like Rudy Dix, who runs Operation Vulindlela in the presidency, to make sure that some of these interventions, which have started to bear fruit, you think of energy and electricity stability, you think of logistics, which seems to be getting off the ground now. Criminal justice system is in a crisis, as we know, but big business have really come to the party to, for example, establish a digital forensics lab, which the NPA so desperately needs to be able to follow these complex financial crimes. So business have really, I think, gone out of their way to assist the state in helping them fill the gaps where they failed. Can Mashatile run with the baton? I don't know, but business will have to work with whomever is in that office. I think, you know, at this stage, Mashatile is the front runner to become head of state, but it's going to be a hell of a battle for the ANC to make sure in 2029 that they remain the biggest political formation in AGNU.
Why should people buy this book?
I think people should buy the book because they need to understand what might be coming. They need to understand who Paul Mashatile is, who wants to be head of state, who will probably become ANC leader, and what South Africa might look like under him.
Fasten our seatbelts?
Absolutely. Always in this country.
Going to be a bumpy ride.
Thanks, Bongani.
Peter du Toit, fantastic book. Well done. And I think it's the book that everybody should read this year.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.